Well, Jesse hot mic'd us, so we're already recording.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. Like a minute ago.
Dagnabbit, Jesse. All right.
Well, welcome to Theology-ish.
Yes, welcome to this. We've got a quick one for you today because we have other stuff going on, so we don't have a whole lot of time to record. So, I'm not even going to ask how you're doing, Ryan.
Oh.
It's not that I don't care. It's that I simply don't have time to hear about your life.
I understand.
Today, I want to just briefly talk about the three rules of logic, especially the three rules of Aristotelian logic. Because they're important and helpful when we engage in serious discussions about things like theology. So that's why we're doing this. Should we have the third mic on?
Jesse can just...
Okay.
Yeah, it does.
He can isolate it. And
it does. We don't even have to isolate it. I can just not send him that audio
file. Enhance. Zoom in. Enhance. Depixelate. I don't know how things work.
Yeah, so sidebar, each of these audio channels, you can just send him that file directly.
Okay.
From that microphone. Okay. So cool, I just don't send him that third audio file and all's well.
All right. So the rules of logic. There are perhaps more of them. I am aware of three in particular, the most basic ones, which means they're the most important ones. If you are talking with someone and they do not agree to these rules of logic, you cannot have a serious, productive conversation with them. Many people that are postmodern or relativists or what have you either implicitly or explicitly reject these rules of logic. That makes them my enemy. And Christ commands me to love my enemy, so I do, but I do not engage in debates with them because I can't, because they don't agree on how to think. All right, this is important. So the first rule of logic is the law of identity. If I had a pen and paper or like a blackboard, I would write these down as like equations. The law of identity says A equals A.
Sure.
This can of chocolate milk, because I got a can of chocolate milk, because they sell chocolate milk in cans.
Yeah.
I got this can of chocolate milk in my hand. This can of chocolate milk in my hand is equal to itself.
Makes sense.
It is not the same as all the other cans of chocolate milk. It has similarities to them. But this chocolate milk here is this chocolate milk.
Yeah.
Right? A equals A. When I say that our words refer to real specific things.
Mm-hmm.
And when we say a word that is referring to a real specific thing, it has to be referring to that thing actually. If it's not, we have a serious problem. Because, like, how are we going to talk about the chocolate milk if the chocolate milk is not equal to the chocolate milk?
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't. A equals A, law of identity. The second law of logic is the law of non-contradiction. A cannot equal not A.
Okay. So that can of chocolate milk cannot equal that box of donuts.
Yes. If I say something like, I'm sorry, just whacked my mic. If I say something like, God is love, and the words God is and love all refer to specific things,
mm-hmm.
It's referring to those specific things. It can't. You can't be contradicting yourself. A cannot equal A and also not A.
Yeah, adds up.
There you go. The last law of Aristotelian logic that I am aware of and particularly interested in talking about is the law of the excluded middle. So if we have A and B, it is either A or it is B. There's not a third thing in between A and B for it to be.
Okay.
If there was a third thing in between A and B, it would be A1.
Or B1.
Or
yeah.
B1 or AA or something. It would be a third thing.
Okay.
Right? Schrodinger's cat has screwed everyone up on this for the past, 80 years. Where he's like, oh, it's in a superposition of both dead and not dead until we directly observe it. Aristotle says, absolutely, the ever-loving heck not. The cat is or is not dead. There is not a third position where it is neither. The law of the excluded middle. So nuance is important and being clear with our terms is important, but a lot of people will use nuance as a way to be weaselly and to violate the law of the excluded middle. But there is a law of the excluded middle. Law of identity, law of non-contradiction, law of the excluded middle. Now, I am not a philosopher, nor am I a logician, nor am I particularly well-versed in Aristotle, but I am aware of these laws, and I'm aware that they're important. And you should be aware that they're important too, because people will weasel around these things and pretend like the cat is in a third superposition or something that is A, like, I don't know, a human, is not A.
Okay.
If you can think of examples where someone would say that human is not a human, you don't have to think all that hard about it.
Oh, I've got a great example that we could talk about. There's a lovely group of people who I'm sure they're still around. I'm not aware, super aware if they're really around like they used to be. But there was this group. Remind me what they're called, William, where they're like, yeah, that Jesus guy, he didn't actually have a body.
That's the Docetists.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah, the Docetists, where he is, and he's here, but also he's not actually a human.
I was thinking abortion people.
Yeah, that too. But
I mean, yes, the Docetists.
I'm trying to keep this more strictly theology related.
The Docetists don't violate the law of identity necessarily, because they say that Jesus is spirit, and they say spirit is spirit.
Okay.
And because he's spirit, he does not have a body. He just seems to.
Okay.
That tracks with the law of identity, to say when it is 1 month old, it is a human. When it is fresh out the womb, it is a human. When it is 8 months in the womb, it is human. When it is 7 months in the womb, it is human. When it is 6 months in the womb, it is not. Wait, hold on. A equals A.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Okay.
And it's, you know, I hate to jump to the extreme, but, you know, this is supposed to be a short little clip. The extreme of this is what the Nazis do with people that they find undesirable.
Yeah.
The undesirable people are not people.
Yeah.
They're subhuman because
they're numbers.
They start taking what it means to be human and monkeying with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're violating the law of identity, because they say that human does not necessarily mean human, because some humans are more human than others. But that's BS. And Aristotle says that's BS. And I'm saying that's BS. And Aquinas would say it's BS too, because A equals A.
Okay. So let's get like straight into the weeds here, because short episode. Law of identity, A equals A.
A equals A.
And then what was the other one? A cannot equal B.
Yeah. The law of non-contradiction.
Yeah, law of non-contradiction. If A equals A and A cannot equal B, how can Jesus equal human and also equal God if A cannot equal B, human equal God? That seems contradictory to the laws of logic.
Through the hypostatic union.
Okay, and how does that supersede the laws of logic?
It doesn't supersede the laws of logic. Okay. It operates in accordance with them.
How so? Because that seems, on its face, self-contradictory. Jesus equals human, but Jesus also equals God, therefore human equals God? How work?
So, first of all, humankind is made in God's
image.
And?
Likeness.
Yes. So, let me ask you this. Does God make humans on purpose?
Yes.
All right. Is God lacking the power to make humans into a particular kind of thing?
No.
Does God know that Jesus is going to Jesus when he makes humans?
Yes.
Okay. Would God make humans in such a way that it would be incompatible for God to join himself to one of them?
No.
Is there anything?
At least it seems.
Is there anything that would prohibit God from making humans in such a way that he could be united with them?
No, I mean, other than just himself, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. What we learn from the incarnation is that what it means for God to be God and for humans to be humans, those are not necessarily incompatible.
Okay.
And the Eastern Orthodox Church, which I am not part of, but I have certain affinities for, takes this and kind of runs with it with the doctrine of theosis, which I think is just the other side of the coin of the beatific vision.
Mm-hmm.
Where what kind of thing can look upon God?
Yeah.
Well, God. Yeah. No one has seen God except God's own self, right? That's what one of them says somewhere in that their book.
Yep.
It seems to be the case. So, and this is also important. Does God have love?
Yeah. No?
God
is love.
Does God have holiness?
No, he is holiness.
Does God have being? No, he is being. God does not have attributes. He is his attributes. This is the doctrine of divine simplicity. God doesn't have parts. He's not composite.
God is.
God is.
Mm.
And part of the Christian message is that we are to love in the same way that Christ loves. We are to be holy, for God is holy. We are to participate in these attributes of God. Can we participate in these attributes of God without participating in God himself?
No.
It seems not that that would not be the case. And it does not violate the rules of logic to say so. It tracks with the rules of logic in mind.
Okay.
Because it is impossible for A to equal not A.
Sure.
A equals A. If God is love and God is holiness and we are to be love and be holiness, then, ... In the words of one of the church fathers, I forget who it was, I want to say Athanasius of Alexandria, God became man so that man could become God.
Hmm.
Which feels weird to Western Christianity. It really does, and I get that. But that's more or less the doctrine of theosis. And I don't think it's illogical. I think it follows the logic perfectly well.
Hmm. I don't know. I'd have to sit on that one. I've
been sitting on that for...
That makes me prickly.
It made me prickly, too, the first time I heard it. I've had to wrestle with that for, 8 years now.
Yeah.
And it took me about 7 years to land on liking it.
Hmm.
You don't have to like it, but that's the doctrine of theosis, and that's the quote from Athanasius. I'm not necessarily saying that's the case. I'm just presenting it to you.
Yeah.
So does that kind of answer your question about how Jesus can be both God and man? Does that get to it at all?
Yes. Yes, I'd say so.
Unfortunately, we're trying to do a really quick thing here, and that's not really a thing you can quickly answer, but that's our shot at it.
Yeah.
So we should probably cut this off.
We've got a little more time. We've got like 10 minutes.
Okay.
We could keep going. C.S. Lewis kind of touches on this in Mere Christianity a little bit, actually.
Yes.
Where he especially talks about how, as that their book says, you know, none have seen God except God. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how in order to see God and to be fully in the presence of God, you must become a certain kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Lewis takes that in the direction of, and you can agree or disagree with this, that in our transition from this life to the next, in being followers of Christ and being a Christian, you transition from being a created being into becoming give me a second. My brain is completely blinking. Hang on. I know the word. A begotten being. There it is. Mm. Begotten. Because a created being cannot lay their eyes upon God, but a begotten being, a being begotten of God himself, that kind of thing could see God. And so he makes the argument that in the process of the human life as a Christian and part of the faith and in your transition into the afterlife with Christ, we become begotten beings, just as Christ is a begotten being.
And I actually think that's a rare L on Lewis's part.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Because I would maintain that Christ is monogenous, the only begotten.
Mm.
And that is a special thing that applies to Christ and Christ alone. And the nature of the created being changes because of Christ's incarnation.
Mm.
Our capacity becomes something different, right? Christ is the firstborn of the dead.
It's true.
And in that, our experience of death and of our bodies changes in a real way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not all the way changed, because it's not the end of time yet, but we look forward to that as the fulfillment of it. And so I more or less agree with Lewis's conclusion there,
mm-hmm.
but I would police his language because I think that to say that we become begotten beings is not quite accurate. That's my take on it. But if we think about the beatific vision and what it's supposed to be and being fully in the presence of God and in complete union with God and united to God, these words that we use to describe the experience of being fully in God's presence, something about the thing that we are has to change to get us there. Someone who's like, I don't know, a Baptist or whatever would be like, of course it changes in the crucifixion and Jesus's blood, we're washed in the blood, and that's how it changes us. And while this is true, but the question after that is, well, what does it change us into?
Mm-hmm.
What do we become? In the words of Christ in one of the Gospels, I believe it's in John, he says, you are gods. It's different than what we usually talk about in the Western church, but
very much so.
I think totally supported by scripture. Now, I'm not quite prepared to take a Nerf bullet for theosis over just a, you know, more Western understanding of the beatific vision. Not quite there, but I see where the Orthodox people are getting it, and I see where they're coming from doctrinally and logically and from the scriptures.
I don't know that there is a Western understanding of the beatific vision. I feel like that's just not a thing.
Well, there is, but you're Protestant, so you haven't seen it.
That tracks.
The Prots ignore the beatific vision, but the Catholics have their own understandings of the eschatological encounter of the human person with God and with God fully that does not broach into theosis.
Yeah.
So that is a thing that's represented in the West.
Hmm.
Just not in our tradition that we're a part of.
Well, I've got nothing else to say unless you do, because we're just about out of time here. So.
I just want to throw out the law of the excluded middle to double down and clarify that Christ, being both fully human and fully divine, does not violate the law of the excluded middle.
Mm.
Because he is not, this is what the Council of Chalcedon's about, he is not a third thing, right? He's not this wiggy, kind of slippery category that doesn't fit into A or B. He is A and B fully.
God is like a three-leaf clover.
No, that's partialism, Patrick.
That's mortalism, Patrick.
So yeah, Christ is both of them.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's an important thing, and it does not violate the law of the excluded middle, at least not in my perspective. You might be listening to this and be like, oh, that clearly violates the law of the excluded middle. Cool. Write us angry emails to theologyish@gmail.com. So,
yeah,
that's it. That's it for this one. Like we said, pretty short. Anyway, thank you for listening to Theology-ish. Be sure to like, comment, and subscribe, and share this with people that need a quick refresher on how to think logically.
Catch you next week.
Later.